This is a Cyber Union talk show for June 28th, 2011, testing the feedback loop.
Walton in Glasgow, Scotland.
Yo soy Stephen in Boston.
So, Stephen, how was Guatemala?
Muy bien, muy bien. I actually had a really good time. I just got back yesterday flying in from Guatemala, which was actually a pretty hectic flight. But my last night in Guatemala was pretty cool. I got to spend it in a pretty radical bar that was where the soldiers of the Civil War of Guatemala, the revolutionary soldiers, met and made their plans. It's called Las Cien Puertas. In Guatemala City, or as they call it, Guate. It was really cool. I actually was spending most of my time in San Marcos, which is in the northern part of Guatemala. And up there, I discovered something I haven't seen in the States in a long time. Internet cafes. And not a place where you take your laptop to, but where they actually have computers. And it kind of surprised me in a lot of ways, because it's been so long since I've actually seen something like that. And I don't want to date myself, but it may have been the late 90s and early 200s, or aughts, I guess is what they call it. And they had a lot of them down there. Actually, like almost every other block, there was an internet cafe. The unfortunate thing, every single one of them was running freaking Windows. I couldn't find any other option other than Windows. I even tried booting from my USB stick to boot Linux, and they prevented that from happening on their BIOS, and I couldn't break into their BIOS, unfortunately. it was a really good trip. I had some personal connections and a lot of connections back to the Boston area. A lot of people in San Marcos who work in the Highlands, which is really agricultural, and it kind of connects to my own family background because my Italian side of the family, my grandmother was first generation in the States, and that's exactly the economy that she came from, was an agricultural economy of farming the yard out in front or outside the house and raising animals, and it was really connecting to my own past, and I really felt almost at home. It felt really good, and had a lot of fun. I learned a lot of Spanish. It was enjoyable. I got to visit Mexico a little bit, and even got to see where the Zapatistas were during the 1994 uprising in San Cristobal de las Casas, and had a lot of fun time seeing up there. I want to actually go back, so we'll see what happens. So in my time away, Walton, what have you been up to?
Well, that sounds fantastic and really, really interesting. I'm afraid I can't really compete with that. I haven't done anything nearly as exciting as what you've been up to. However, I've done two things. And the first is that I have bought a microphone.
Oh.
So my dulcet tones should be coming over a lot more clearly than they were before, when I was just using my laptop mic. So that might improve the quality of the podcast. I hope it does. Listeners can let us know if we sound better now.
I'll certainly have fun on the editing side of that. But for those that don't know, there's a lot of background noise to break out when you're using a different microphone, shall we say, instead of making it seem like it's a less class. But welcome to hear the new mic. Actually, you can already notice the differences already, even on this conversation as we speak.
Okay, and the other thing that I've been doing is that I have been working with my union to develop a different kind of web presence. So my union is Unite, which is a big general union in the UK and Ireland. I'm based in the Scottish region, and in Unite we decided that we needed to reach out both to our members and to the general public a bit more and essentially have a conversation with people, and that the existing website wasn't the right place to do that because it's quite a formal place, and it has official policy and press statements and things like that, and we wanted a space that was a bit more open for debate. So I spent the time developing the website unitescotland.org with a couple of colleagues, and so far it's gone quite well. It's only been up for 2 weeks, but we're getting quite a good response from people. It's built using WordPress, which is open source software, so that's a good thing. And we're doing a lot of interesting things, including using text messaging to reach out to members and to poll members on things. And we're also hosting some public meetings. The whole idea is curating debate and having progressive ideas, fresh ideas for a progressive Scotland is what we're calling the website. And I think it's a little bit too early to say a lot about it now, but I hope it's something we can revisit in the show in maybe a month or 6 weeks' time to see how it's going, if we're managing to engage members in new ways using social media and website comments and all that kind of thing.
So what you're trying to get members to discuss, that seems very democratic. I don't know if unions are really in support of that. You might be treading on some new turf there. I'm not sure. But no, that sounds great, Walton. It sounds exciting to see a website that's actually trying to encourage discussion instead of blasting information to us as members. Mm-hmm. Great. I'm excited. I took a look at the site a little bit earlier, and it looks really nice, and it looks very fresh. It doesn't seem kind of like a lot of the union sites that I've seen, where they're kind of, it's not really old, but seem kind of dusty. They don't seem like they're like coming at you in the sense, like, it's not like it's eye candy or anything, but it just, it's fresh. It seems revealing and it seems embracing and welcoming, which is great. So, you know, I commend you for such a great job.
Yeah, I mean, there was a bit of an internal argument that needed to be won. And the biggest one was allowing people to post unmoderated comments, which is something will be very familiar to anyone who's been involved in trade unions and internet stuff. Is there's generally a bit of a fear of people posting stuff online, which is negative, and unions being really, really afraid of that. But we essentially said that we need to be open. We need to allow people to post negative comments. And they did. And when the first negative comments started coming in, I was thinking, I better go and respond to that, better go and write a decent response. And I found I didn't need to, because our own members got stuck in and wrote some really good responses to some of the comments that came in. And I think that's a lot healthier. I think I'd like to see the debates around trade union issues and economic issues that are important to working people being held in the public sphere a lot more. And for us just to be a lot more open about our internal processes and about what's happening. And I'd like to see this extend a bit as well, and see union branches and union locals also creating their own web presence and having that kind of conversation about workplace issues.
That's great. I commend it and want to see more. And hopefully that the idea grows in the States and grows across the world in a lot of places. I'm hoping something like that brings about a larger interactive community online instead of it just being a one-way path. So that's great. If I may do a segue here. In a complete alternate world, when we have already given up on the world of the technology of Skype, shall we say, is what happened to Skype this week? Any news on that since we've stemmed away?
Actually, yes. I'm sorry if people are sick of hearing about Skype, because we have been going on about it, but it's kind of important to us because we use voice over internet protocol to speak to each other while we record the show. So it's an issue that we confront every time we start the show, is what are we going to do? How are we going to record the show? Yeah, when Microsoft took over Skype, we were immediately quite nervous about it. And then today I saw posted on Identica and on Twitter an article that said Microsoft to add eavesdropping to Skype.
Whoa. Now, eavesdropping? That is not good.
It doesn't sound good, and I haven't actually had the time to investigate in great detail what it means, but it sounds like Microsoft has filed a patent for a technology that would allow them to, or allow someone to, eavesdrop on Skype phone calls. So I don't fetishize privacy, but I'm pretty keen on people not eavesdropping on calls that I'm making. So for me, that's just another reason why it's really important for us to find an alternative to Skype. And we're not using Skype today, are we?
No, we're in fact using Jingle. But this actually reminds me of something that I read. And I think you read this book too at one point, called Little Brother by, was it Christopher Doctorow?
Corey.
Oh, wow. My bad. Sorry, Corey. but the book Little Brother comes to mind because it was a really interesting book to me. I don't know if it comes across in the same context, but in that case, it was the government spying, but it's using, in the book, at least, using, private technologies to do it. And in a very similar sense, what if Microsoft's looking to do the patent, what's going to stop, either government or even corporations? I fear them both in many times, of just spying on us and our ideas and what we're trying to do and trying to develop a better world that doesn't, I mean, privacy shouldn't be an issue, but when somebody's going to try to patent it and make money off of it, then it's a different point. And That's when I have a concern. I feel like this way of Microsoft going after this is like taking power away. And I felt like that the mm-hmm. book Little Brother was all about trying to regain the power that was lost. And in that case, it was kind of like a pseudo post terrorist attack that happened on the U.S. In this case, the book, for those that are wondering, is in San Francisco, not the area of New York. I don't know. Were there any parts of the book that connected to you when you read that article about Microsoft?
I don't know, because I've not read the book.
Oh, well, you got to read that one. That's a really good one. Yeah. for those that are listening, Little Brother, honestly, I read it on my phone, believe it or not. But the Doctorow does a really great job in this one. And I love reading, actually, his introduction to his books, because he does a really good job of laying out the scenario of what it was when he was writing it. And I think he wrote this one in, like, I think it was 6 weeks or some really short period of time. And the first people he apologizes to is his children and his wife, because he hadn't seen them for that time period. He just, like, suddenly disappeared and was, like, waking up in the middle of the night writing frantically these different ideas that came out. But the coolest part about the book is, and he says it's in the beginnings, every single piece of software that he talks about is something that exists that we can use. And there's a tremendous amount of use of Tor, which is the onion router, to throw people off on where you're browsing from and everything. And it just kind of makes me think of it. Like, if Skype, it becomes an open source thing, it'd be great. But if it doesn't, you know, and people use it, you should definitely be, you know, throwing off Microsoft, in this case, their ability to eavesdrop on you. Which mm-hmm. is...
So just explain what Tor is, because maybe not everyone knows.
That's a very good point. Tor, I'm not super familiar with it. I haven't used it in great extent, but I actually learned a lot from it from this book. But basically what Tor, or as it is otherwise known as the Onion Router, does is it does proxies on your location. So it'll kind of disguise and camouflage where you're actually connecting to the internet from. So I'm in Boston. So instead of it saying, when you look at what I'm browsing, it's not going to say I'm in Boston. It could say I'm in, like, South Africa or the Antarctic, or, and then they'll trace that, and then they'll try to figure if it goes to where it goes next. And it could bounce to, like, a random little town in the States to a random little town in South America or whatever. So if anybody's trying to go on.
So it's an anonymous rerouter then.
Essentially, that's what it does. Mm-hmm. And it's really intriguing. It's not a matter that I want people to hide from everything, but when you fear that people are trying to track you, and I think this is very relevant in a lot of developing nations where any radical movements are heavily watched by government and corporations and could be easily attacked, it's something that I think is a relevant tool to keep them off on their guard, wasting their time trying to figure out where things are going and what things are. And it encrypts information too, I believe. If I may be wrong on that one, but from the book at least, I thought it said that it does encrypt information.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I may be wrong, and I apologize if I am.
There's one other cool thing about the book which you have forgotten to mention.
Oh, what is that?
And that is that the book is available under a Creative Commons license, which means you can download it for free and read it on your phone or your computer if you like, in one of a number of formats.
Yeah, that is also true. And in fact, that's how I actually got it on my phone, was a Creative Commons download. To be honest, I do want to buy the hardcover or the paperback, either one. It's just they're really good books that I kind of want to hand them out to people. That's true. Creative Commons is it's one of the successes of Creative Commons. In fact, a friend of mine wrote a book, and I asked him if he knew about it, and he's actually looking into Creative Commons. And I even told him about the model that Doctorow uses and encouraged him to try to make use of that same kind of idea. You know, keep a publisher if you want. That'll help with editing. It'll help with actually getting the information out there. It'll help with sales as well. But, you know, there are people who don't have access to purchasing books, and I think that's a great way of getting to those same readers. And the communities around it have actually gone out to actually do translations into other languages too, which is really cool. So thank you for that bit of feedback, if you will. We're all about the segues today.
Yes, and on feedback, we had some feedback from MJ Ray of the Software Co-op, wrote a very detailed review of our show for Planet Debian blog. And we're really, really pleased to see that, because we want more people to know about the show, and it's really important to us that people take the time to listen and to give us feedback, and that people care enough about the issues that we raise to have a response. And MJ's response was mixed. A lot of what he said was highly critical of the way we're doing the show, and that's fine because it's a learning experience for us. He was particularly critical of the way we spoke about Linfone and Ekija last time. I think you'll remember in episode 4, we spoke about how we had failed to get Linfone and Ekija working, and he felt we were being critical of the software and that it's not the software's fault, it's the hardware's fault. It's in particular the fact that we, Stephen and I, have failed to control our routers. We don't understand our networking hardware properly, and we're blaming that failing on the software. So how did you feel about that feedback, Stephen?
Yeah, then, and that's a valid point, though. I hope this is not our living resume that's going to prevent us from ever getting a networking job of any sort. to be fair, unfortunately, when we did play with both Linfone and Ekija, we actually just kind of spent like a quick couple of minutes on it to see if we could get it going, and it was on a tip that I had heard on Linux Outlaws about how easy it was to use, except it's easy to use when you know just a little bit more, and the missing link, at least I think in Linfone, and I'm going to test this out, was the stun server that we didn't actually connect to, which would get alleviate our firewall, could have alleviated our firewall issues. But one thing that kind of struck me is that, you know, we aren't professionals. We're not, you know, the super user, power user experienced individual that knows how to use every software out there. We want to test them out, and sometimes we'll do it blindly without ever having used it before. And just, it kind of is our first impression, but it doesn't mean that we'll never encourage the use of it. And I think Linfone has a lot of opportunity with it because it's a pretty cool piece of software. It's just, it was a user error in part on ours that we didn't try to hack it enough to get it working in time for the show. But, you know, to be fair, we're not using Skype. And I forgot to mention earlier that I will be deinstalling Skype or uninstalling it. I like deinstalling. It sounds more, you know, severe, even though it's not probably grammatically correct. But, there are other ones that we also want to test out. So we're kind of in the exploration experience right now, and just seeing, you know, Linfone, it just didn't, for us, it was just not, it wasn't as simple, so to speak, as Skype. And it's not that we don't encourage it. It's just that we wanted to play with it first.
Yeah, and I think it's important to remember the point of the show is that we're testing things which we hope ordinary trade union activists and members will be able to use. And, you know, as Stephen says, we're not software or hardware experts. We don't have any particular networking expertise. And probably most of the people listening to the show don't have that either. The point of what we're trying to do is test things to see whether they're simple enough to use if you're not an expert. And I think, yeah, what we felt at the time, Linfone isn't simple enough. Now, it might not be Linfone's fault. It might be, you know, there might be a whole bunch of other issues. And we'd certainly like to help make it simple. You know, we'd like to figure it out and tell people how we did it.
And to be fair, too, it's not like we actually reached out to the Linfone or Ekija communities. We just kind of just took it and just went with it. And I didn't read up as much as I should have. I didn't read any README files, which, you know, is a process that some people will use. I don't know if anybody who's taking on new software would read, you know, the manual on how to use something. I kind of feel like most don't. Not to say that's a good thing. I think it's something that people should be doing. But there are other tools that we want to explore, too, because not all of it meets exactly what we're looking for. I mean, you and I are in two entirely different countries, and at some point we do want to have guests on the show. And if we have to get them to use the same software, we need to master it a little bit more and make sure it's simple for them to install and get connected to us. And if there are other options that we could utilize, there are services that I've looked into that have, like, call-in numbers that would connect to it, very similar to Skype, with that call-in number, which I think you have to pay for, actually. But I can't remember. Again, I'm not a Skype expert. There are a lot of features that we're looking into, and we're just testing them out. And we're going to test them out again. Like, we're not going to take one try at it, and if it doesn't work, we're not going to use it again. We have limited time. I mean, we do the show, and there's a lot of editing and everything else that goes with the show. As well as the other posts that we put up on the website and communication that we try to maintain within Identica and Twitter, that, you know, trying for us to coordinate our own schedule to try to test these things out together can be a little bit more demanding. Though, again, I do feel I might have the solution for Linfone, but we still yet to need to test that out. I did just get back from Guatemala yesterday. But in the realm of feedback, because we do, I do want to say that we, you know, it, as critical as it's going to be, we put our voices out there and we expect to hear criticisms. And if it's harsh, it's harsh. If it's not harsh, it's great. And either one, it doesn't matter. We're looking forward to it because we know the listeners are there and we want to hear the feedback. And if we do something wrong, we want to correct it. So, you know, we do welcome it. And in that same light, there was another correction, Walton. And this was actually just some minor stuff that came up. We had done a talk about Creative Commons license where we had referred to it as just a copy left license. And Douglas or from Identica that I know did want to – he's actually very familiar with the stuff. He's a host on the Music Manumit show. Ed just clarified that Creative Commons is technically a copyright license. It's the term copyleft is a growing term, but it's a copyright. So Creative Commons is a copyright license. It's just that it's a very leftist perspective. It is probably the better way to put it. And I just wanted to make that correction because we do refer to Creative Commons a lot since our show is a Creative Commons production, and same with the website and everything else. That was one of the corrections he had also had asked for. The other was a mistake that I had made when I tried to clarify that OpenOffice and LibreOffice are rejoining. And it's not necessarily the same. There's a bit of a, as he put it, a kerfuffle. Though there's an English, a U.S. and a British spelling difference on this one. But the OpenOffice that Oracle had purchased basically through the purchase of Sun had been re-released in an Apache license, which is not the same as the LibreOffice, which is under a GPL. I think it's a GPL or LGPL. I'm pretty sure it's a GPL license. And they don't work together in the same. There's limitations that Apache has, and there's more freedoms that the GPL has. And so there's still stuff that needs to be negotiated and figured out in that case. So it's not completely rejoining. But if anything, it might be a gesture, but it's not really clear what Oracle means by that.
Okay.
So the last piece that he just brought up was that we had also harped on Microsoft pretty harshly, but I think that's kind of deserved. But they do, in the case of document readers, even though they do upgrade their software that you have to buy it and to be able to look at it, they do offer a reader for people who have a previous version, and maybe even before people who don't have any version, to be able to read Google Doc or a document itself, a .doc or .docx or .x, whatever it is now anymore. I don't use that stuff anymore. And it's just a good clarifying point.
That's very nice of them, isn't it?
Yes, certainly.
Very kind of Bill Gates to reach out and allow people who haven't purchased his software to read documents created by it.
Yes, yeah.
A great benefactor.
It's actually kind of funny. I had a whole conversation with my father because he's been volunteering in Haiti about the pirating of Microsoft Office. And in a lot of the third world, it happens, and Microsoft usually doesn't care. And I have a feeling the reason they don't care is because those are future purchasers that if they ever are able to escape the economic turmoils of their countries, if they ever come to the States or ever are able to buy something, they'll actually purchase a Microsoft product. But anyhow, that's a whole other story.
Yeah. I think you're right about that, and it actually brings me back to what you're saying about internet cafes in developing countries right at the beginning. That's certainly been my experience as well, is whenever I've traveled in Africa, there are a lot of internet cafes, and that's the main way people still access the internet, those people who use the internet at all, which is most people don't. And mostly they are really, really old computers, and mostly they're running Windows, and they're also full of all sorts of other rubbish, and they run really slow because they've picked up viruses and unbelievable amounts of rubbish over the years. So, you know, kind of, I think we were having this conversation the other night about how, you know, what a cool project it would be for a union or some progressive organization to do some computer recycling project and actually train people in developing countries to recycle old computers and install Linux on them, you know, something that's appropriate for an old computer, and you know, try and source computers from the richer countries which are being thrown out due to upgrade and recycle them and use them and give people a bit of freedom and also basically superior software. So yeah, it'd be really cool to see something like that.
Exactly, and I think it's something that it doesn't, it's not that it doesn't have any attention. I just feel like it's not really been talked about. I mean, not that I've gone and tried to look through communities online or anything like that to see discussions about trying to create like Linux internet cafes, But it really does seem like a really good idea, in the sense that it will alleviate a lot of the technology gaps in a lot of cases, where, you know, and I'm not saying that we go and, you know, people go and put internet cafes where people aren't even going to use internet cafes, but mm-hmm. where they currently exist is, you know, and maybe it's just that Microsoft needs a little bit of competition, and they give this stuff to those countries. And if you don't challenge them now, then people are just going to think Microsoft is the way of the future.
Well, and, I mean, Africa and other developing countries are going to be Microsoft's next big market unless we're able to get people using alternatives. And, you know, there are plenty of good reasons for using alternatives. We speak about them all the time, but one of the reasons that's particularly good is that a lot of Linux software is available in local African languages, mm-hmm. which Microsoft isn't, because it's not profitable for Microsoft to translate itself into Zulu or Xhosa or Swahili or whatever language. But a lot of the African languages have been translated, Linux software has been translated into them by the community, and a lot of the software is actually available in local languages, which is really important, because it means that people don't have to learn English before they can learn computers. They can, you know, they can go straight on to learning how to use technology in their native language. And I think that is an important way for breaking down that barrier.
And I think you kind of, there's a point that I just want to elaborate on, is that this, the sense of community, and there is no sense of community with Microsoft. It's like, Microsoft, this is the operating system. This is how you're supposed to use it. Don't screw with that, because you're going to screw things up. And I think the sense of community about even just doing translation, and I mean, this is, I think, an opportunity for people in social movements, labor movements, to actually jump in, because you'd be surprised how often people are looking for help with translators, translations into many different languages. And it's a way, an easy access for even people who are not super tech savvy to jump in. And I think that's something we should be encouraging. And I think this is an idea that could grow into something where you develop. I mean, you could even take your local Linux user group and start thinking about this in that concept, because they're all over the place around the world and everything, in the third mm-hmm. world to, you know, here in the States to wherever. And I think those are resources that could be utilized for building something. And you know, whether it's a collective or a co-op or whatever, I think it's something that needs to be done. It has mm-hmm. a tremendous amount of potential, I think, at least. But anyhow, I didn't mean to kind of go on that too much, but it's a valid point to discuss, and I think we're going to revisit that a lot. The other thing I just wanted to do is just give a little bit of a shout-out to a friend that had helped me out a lot recently, Walton. He's known as Block Addict on Identica, or otherwise known as Brian. He has actually been really helpful in helping me with using Audacity and doing editing, and I just wanted to give a shout out to thank him for the help that he has given. He's been very helpful in cutting down corners to actually improving the sound quality of the show and everything else. So, is there anything else you'd like to discuss today, sir?
No, I think that's enough. Welcome back to the U.S. and glad you had a great time in Guatemala and Mexico.
Well, thank you. I did. And till next week, we'll see you all then. Or as they say in Guatemala, nos vemos. Adios.